In the name of our one God, who creates, redeems, and sustains us. Amen. Amen. This morning, we listen in as Peter asks Jesus a question. Jesus, Peter asks, I know that I should forgive someone who has done me wrong. I just want to clarify, though, how many times? Like as many as seven? Not bad at all, Peter. Not bad at all. Peter, he understands that Jesus' way is different. That Jesus has called Peter, but called the community that is living in Jesus' way by Jesus' example, that this community should be distinct. It should carry itself differently. It should relate in distinct ways based on reconciliation and forgiveness and peaceableness and so forth. So Peter understands that forgiveness is a part of this. Forgiveness is a big part. Of course, though, there must be a limit, right? And so he sets the bar high. Seven whole times. That seems pretty good. Open-handed, generous to someone that might offend us. Then it gets crazy. Not seven times, Jesus says, but 77. Or in another translation of the same passage, 70 times 7, which is more than 77, actually. You can fact check that. How can I keep track of this? Seven, I can kind of keep track. I have both hands. I could keep it in a log somewhere. But 77 or 70 times 7? Jesus responds to Peter with such a large number that the ability to keep track is practically impossible. I think that's the point. Do not keep track, I believe Jesus is saying, at all. Just forgive. Don't keep count, not of those things that need forgiveness, not of the times you offer forgiveness, not of the times that you need forgiveness. There is no scoreboard. So offer and receive without calculation. Then Jesus tells Peter this parable, and I will not repeat it, but I'll just add that this servant, or slave in this particular translation, this servant owes the king over 150,000 years worth of income for a common day laborer. 150,000 years worth of income. So like the 70 times 7, this is a completely ridiculous number. It's incomprehensible. You really can't keep track of it. We know the servant cries for mercy, the debt is forgiven, the servant is freed. And of course, as Jesus does so often, there is another twist. The servant is also owed some money, we hear, around 100 days' wages. Significant, no doubt, except that, as we know, he was just forgiven an impossibly large debt. The first thing he does, you know, after he's forgiven, is he goes and he throws this debtor in prison for a sum of money which, considering the circumstances, doesn't even compare to all that he has been forgiven. Again, though, the numbers involved really make the numbers irrelevant. That is part of the point. Forgiveness, Jesus, I think, is saying, is not something that can be measured or quantified. It's really not a single action. It's a process, and really it's part of a relationship. It's what flows from people and what flows from relationships and communities that have been transformed by God's love. Transformed by God's love as we know it in Jesus. And love might be a good way to understand forgiveness. Love can be felt, known, lived. It can be given and received, but it can't be counted. You can't keep track of it. Like using Peter's own question to Jesus. When we hear him asking, how many times should I forgive? It doesn't sound that strange. But what if the question were this? Using Peter's own question, would we not think it strange if he asked Jesus, Jesus, how often should I love? How much? How many times? As many as seven? You would never ask that about love. And of course, both love and forgiveness, they do look differently, and they will look differently according to the relationship involved. Both take very different forms depending on the nature of a particular relationship. And it needs to be said that neither love nor forgiveness look like amnesia, and they certainly do not look like a blank check that allows abuse. Sometimes, love and forgiveness actually mean leaving a relationship and extending forgiveness in very different ways. And it can take a lot of time. And forgiveness can be, at times, unbelievably, maybe even excruciatingly difficult. If we've experienced this aspect of forgiveness, we may relate with the servant who has real trouble extending forgiveness. We may be able to relate with the king, even who, oddly enough, given what Jesus says right before this parable, forgives once, but not again. Forgiveness can be tough. It is hard not to hold on to grievances, to not keep score, to not make sure people get what we think they deserve. Forgiveness can be quite a process. Yet even so, that we would know that this is what God desires for us. That we would know something else, though, as well. That this is what God extends to us, always and everywhere. Again and again. That nothing can separate us from God's forgiveness, God's generosity, welcome, grace. And what Jesus calls us to isn't just forgiveness. It's a continual process of transformation. And yet forgiveness is a part of that. It's a continual process of opening ourselves to one another, of actively seeking reconciliation. Because these are the things that mark the community formed by Jesus' Spirit, as distinctly different from what we see elsewhere. This is the kind of community that we are called to be. And we don't need this building to do that. We're blessed by having this building. We're blessed by having been able to worship in this space. And we will come back together again. We will be back together. And being back together 6 months ago, or as we were 6 months ago, or into the future, That's where we practice the kind of community that Jesus asks of us. A community that's not marked because it's some kind of utopia, far from it. But it's marked because when it's not utopic, and it never is, that we engage with each other in distinctly different ways than we see in so many other places. So within these walls, that's where we do practice being a reconciling, life-giving, loving community formed through Jesus' Spirit. But it's not only here. It's well outside of these walls, and so that's how we truly be church. And I know I'm repeating what I said last week, but it's helpful that I remind myself that as much as we want to be back here, and I know that we do, that this time could actually help transform. It could be God's teachable moment to us to more deeply understand that we are church, whether we're here, physically here, or not. And so I'm also conscious that this Sunday, you know, we move back to 10 o'clock. Next Sunday, we're going to go to the high altar and we should have our audiovisual equipment installed. This Sunday normally would be homecoming Sunday. We would be leaving here after we're dismissed to go, not yet out into the world, but go into the parking lot and have a picnic together. And so I'm conscious in myself and also that you might be feeling a particular kind of pain this morning, realizing that the program you're starting in that in a very atypical way, that we were not back together for Homecoming Sunday the way we would have wished. Not that a name change or a rebranding is going to do it, but it's not a rebranding. We were talking, this was some weeks ago, and Melissa suggested, as we were talking about names for today, reimagining Sunday. And that's true. We have been, for the last 6 months, reimagining how we are church. And we'll continue to do so. So, of course, we welcome your suggestions, and you had some in the survey, and that was a great response. But I want you to look for some things. Hopefully, I'll be sending you an update, maybe tomorrow, about some things to look forward to, some small groups that we have developed or are developing that we'll be running, and we're going to try to do those in person and virtual, so as inclusive as possible. We have a blessing, back-to-school blessing next week. The animal blessing is also going to be on October 4th. Both of those are going to try to do it at the Wamsutta Club. So it's a modified form of in-person blessings. And so we're going to look at some opportunities where we can come together for those who feel willing and able in a safe way, and also being able to do some of those things virtually as well. Grace Church is the kind of community that does not want to be lied to, and I'm not going to try to, I have no fear that you're going to panic, so I'd rather just tell you the truth, a truth that you well know. We see cases rising in New Bedford. There have been several clusters recently, and one of those is related to a church specifically, and then we see regionally in Massachusetts clusters developing around churches. And so as you know full well, the leadership here is taking a cautious approach. That's me, of course. It's your clergy, it's the regathering team, it's the vestry and the wardens and the officers. As we feel that truly being church right now, this is a moment, it's an opportunity to discover together how we are a community called still through Jesus' Spirit with all the same things, still called to reconciliation, still called to forgiveness, generosity, expressing God's goodness. And the love and care that we have for one another, ironically, has kept us apart. Some of those things will still be true for the foreseeable future. And yet, we're going to continue to look for ways that we can come together. So, God bless you on Reimagining Sunday. God bless each and every one of us. Amen.